On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life or if you are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Every month there's a different theme and new exclusive items you can only get with Loot Crate. Treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or loved one. For April, join us as we salute some of our favorite mystery solvers with items from Stranger Things, Batman, The X-Files, and Marvel's Jessica Jones. One lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate including signed copies of Jessica Jones, Alias, Volumes 1 through 4. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate, and when the cutoff happens, that's it, it's over. Make sure to head to www.lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter the code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. The Pro Football Weekly Podcast is back on your airwaves, podcast waves. I'm not sure what the technical term would be there, but nonetheless, I am your host, Arthur Arkish, thrilled as always that you are back with us again this week on the program. Looking forward to sharing with you a good interview that I taped with Bleacher Report's Mike Tenier. He's not only a friend of the show, but one of my favorite NFL voices, and looking forward to being able to give you his thoughts on Tony Romo and Richard Sherman and Marshawn Lynch and Adrian Peterson. There's lots of NFL news. We'll get into a little bit of brief draft discussion as well. Before we do that, I just wanted to give you my quick thoughts on the Tony Romo situation. Yes, it's been a couple days now since he traded in his helmet for a CBS headset after being released by the Cowboys. And I can't help but feel like the big winners in this situation are, well, A, Tony Romo, of course, because now he is getting out of harm's way, and I think he's going to have a chance to be pretty darn good in that CBS job. I'm sure there will be an adjustment period, but I think he should become an upgrade over Phil Simms sooner than later. That's not saying much. And then I think the biggest winner of the situation has to be Jerry Jones. And the reason I want to talk about him for a minute is because, yes, he did come under a lot of fire for his handling of the situation this offseason, leaving Romo twisting in the wind a little bit, insisting that he was going to trade him or nothing, even though everyone saw that the contract was untradeable. And even though the, you know, conventional wisdom suggested that his relationship with Romo would allow him to do the right thing and release Romo and give him maximum options with 31 other clubs and no contract, cost prohibitive contract hanging over the whole situation. Well, call it stubbornness, call it patience, call it whatever you want, but it paid off for Jerry Jones because now he doesn't, at least for now, and I said quote unquote retirement at the top, I think, because I have no idea whether Romo is going to get the itch, whether an injury to a contender or just a contender like the Texans. We'll see enough from Tom Savage and say we must have Tony Romo and we'll give him this incentive-laden deal to make it happen. But at least for now, with Romo not staying in state and potentially taking the Texans deep into the playoffs where they've never been before, stealing some of the spotlight from the Cowboys, and gosh, there's enough spotlight for the Cowboys, so God forbid they have to share a little bit of it in state. But hey, I just got to credit Jerry Jones. He's a great businessman, and he won this time around. Yes, they will have to still handle Romo's cap charge, which I believe they're going to spread out over 2 years. I would have liked to have seen them just sort of pay the piper now, if you will, and reap as many benefits for as long as possible of the cheap rookie labor or second-year labor they have in that backfield with Dak and Zeke. But that's not the way the Cowboys operate, and regardless, that's not my problem to deal with, and at least for now, the thought of Tony Romo playing for the Texans isn't Jerry Jones's problem to deal with either. So tip my cap to him. And the other NFC East club that I've been hard on, and I'm not taking any of that back, because I believe that Daniel Snyder and Bruce Allen deserve every bit of the Pro Football Weekly's wrath that they've received this offseason for the classless way that they dispatched Scott McLuhan and for the way that they have bungled this Kirk Cousins situation. They're going to pay a slightly above average quarterback like no other, frankly, when it's all said and done, likely. But anyway, where I'm going with this is, after kind of kicking their best talent evaluator to the curb when he needed them the most, it stood to reason that Washington was going to struggle in this free agent period. Remember, they went to the combine without McLuhan, and clearly he either had a very concise plan for them before he exited, or Allen and the rest of that department had a really good feel for what Washington needed to do this offseason, because I've come away very impressed when I expected them to really struggle. I think when you look at deals, and it's been a few weeks now, obviously, since Terrell Pryor signs the one-year deal, Stacy McGee also gets a low-risk investment to come over from Oakland. And then this week to add Zach Brown, the playmaking inside linebacker, on a 1 year deal worth, I think, up to $4 million. Just a terrific get, I think, for Washington. And you didn't have to be a football expert to look at the middle of that defense last year and kind of see where Washington's issues were. So now suddenly you bring in, as I mentioned, Stacy McGee. I didn't mention Terrell McClain. You weaken your division rival with that signing. He was the Cowboys' best interior rusher last year and should be a fine replacement for Chris Baker. But when you look at all these moves, it just appears to me that Washington has managed to really upgrade that roster and really attack some of their greatest weaknesses, despite not having McLuhan there. So color me surprised and impressed. And just to reiterate, I don't think that makes Daniel Snyder or Bruce Allen any better of guys, but I guess their football operations are still in decent shape, because this looks like a better club, and we'll see how they kind of fit into the NFC East picture now. I don't know if the defense is going to be improved enough and how much more they can do in the draft, but I think they've kind of avoided some of the doomsday scenarios that threaten to play out after the way this offseason started, and you lose Garcon and Jackson, obviously, and I think they've recovered well. So I do want to credit Washington for that. And because we've kind of done the NFC East thing, and I'm going to ask Mike Tenier about the Eagles, I guess I'll just mention the Giants here real quick too. I don't know if DJ Fluker is the answer to their offensive line issues. I still have real concerns there, particularly on the edges, but you know, that defense didn't need a lot more help, obviously. I think re-signing Keenan Robinson was important for them. And outside of that, not a lot of, you know, moves that are really going to move the needle, of course, other than bringing on Brandon Marshall, which is going to be a fascinating, it's going to be a fascinating dynamic for them, obviously, with Odell Beckham Jr. And I actually just completed my first mock draft, my second mock draft at Pro Football Weekly, and I sent the Miami tight end David Njoku to the Giants too. And that would be fun to think about all the possibilities, the mismatch potential, and the big play potential for that offense that's already there, but what he could add to it as well. So I guess those are my quick thoughts on the NFC East. This has somehow become the NFC East podcast, but we're going to open things up now with Mike Tenier of Bleacher Report. As I mentioned, a lot of big NFL topics to discuss, not only Tony Romo, but Richard Sherman on the trade table, on the trade market suddenly, and Marshawn Lynch may be closer to returning. Adrian Peterson may be closer to retiring. Let's break it all down now with Mike Tenier of Bleacher Report.
And next up on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, one of my favorite guests, Bleacher Report's lead writer, Mike Tenier. You know, there's a lot of guys who are funny, and there's a lot of guys who are knowledgeable. There's few guys who do both, and Mike does it well. What's happening?
Oh, wow, with an intro like that, now I feel like there's a lot of pressure on me. I'm doing great. I'm doing what we all do on beautiful days in April. I'm watching defensive tackle film in my office, looking for the perfect sleeper defensive tackle.
Very nice. And are you finding one yet, or are you still grinding away? Don't worry, you still have 3 weeks, so there is time.
I got 3 weeks, but I've got like 15 other positions to look at. You know, I like Vincent Taylor of Oklahoma State better than just about anybody else. But that just might be, you know, the Stockholm syndrome of sitting here watching these guys. When you see somebody who's like actually quick coming off the line, you're like, yeah, that's the guy I want, and then you ignore everything else. So I gotta keep grinding a little bit.
All right. Well, we'll get back to you on that, Mike. I've got some NFL related questions. I'm sure we'll get into some draft stuff here at the end, but I'll just dive right in. It's been a few days, obviously, since the Tony Romo news, but we haven't had you on the podcast, and I'm just kind of curious to hear your general thoughts on Romo. He won't call it retirement, but he's obviously heading to CBS to replace Phil Simms. Does this feel temporary? Do you think this will ultimately be kind of his permanent move? What do you see here?
It really felt temporary up to the moment where he put that CBS jacket on and he was taking pictures with the CBS jacket. I'm like, next thing you know, he's going to be on one of the CSI crime investigation shows next to Mark Harmon and all the other old guys. Scott Bakula, you know. So on that respect, it's like, wow, I'm starting to believe it now that he's actually put the stuff on. I can't imagine. I'm pretty certain phone calls are going to happen. Quarterbacks get injured. If the draft goes a particular way and a team like the Texans looks around and says, oh my God, somehow we managed to come out of the draft without drafting a quarterback. We seem to do that every year. Why does that keep happening to us? that phone is going to ring, and he might take those offers. I can't shake the idea, and I don't have any inside information on this, that he wanted to play, he wants the right situation, that he got up one day and the neck felt really bad, and suddenly that started changing his mind a little bit. Because this seemed like the 10th option or the 20th option or the last resort, or, you know, I don't want to use the phrase nuclear option, but that was kind of it, up until suddenly it became the best option for him. I'm wondering if something changed a little bit physically for him to make that decision.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's easy to kind of gloss over Romo's multiple back surgeries in the past couple years. In some ways, it's similar to what Peyton Manning went through. In other ways, you know, I even think back to everyone kind of, a lot of people had kind of just hoped Peyton would hang him up after such a great career, but obviously he was able to kind of author a second act, and we'll see if Romo does or doesn't. You know, it feels to me, Mike, like the big winner here, besides from Romo, who's now out of harm's way and I'm sure going to get paid very handsomely on CBS, it feels like it's Jerry Jones, because he doesn't have to worry about what, at least for now, Romo may go out and do. And as you alluded to, it feels like the Texans are the big losers. We know that Bill O'Brien can be resourceful at quarterback, but man, is he ever going to get an actual a prospect, a talent that he can win more than 9 games and go to the playoffs with?
Resourceful is an interesting term. Almost like if we always make sure that the quarterback is the wrong choice, then we never get faulted for never having the right choice out there. But yeah, it would have been interesting to see Tony Romo there. I think that would have been good for the organization. You know, you could have put together a scenario where they put Tony Romo on there and they drafted the Pat Mahomes or somebody like that. Mm-hmm. And so you said the old Romo and the new Romo coming in, and they can learn from each other. Now you don't get that. You know, I've heard the name Jay Cutler going around, and I think we were joking on Twitter about it. Jay Cutler and Bill O'Brien would clutch each other's necks and fall off the cliff together like Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty. That would never happen. So I think we're back to, you know, going into this draft, should be quarterbacks out there. And that excuse period, I think, is over in terms of, okay, we've waited through all these different quarterback prospects, this prospect, that half prospect, sort of prospect, semi-prospect, all these guys were. When is this guy going to come in? When are we going to see Bill O'Brien, the quarterback guru and the genius who can turn Tom Brady into Tom Brady, or whatever it is he did that we seem to think he's a good quarterback coach? I want to actually see it happen with a real prospect where we can't make excuses for it.
Mike, I had to chuckle. I think it was at the owners' meetings that Bill O'Brien said he wasn't going to play a rookie quarterback. It's tough to play a rookie quarterback anyway. And I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm not saying he's wrong by any means, but I'm thinking in the back of my head, it's kind of funny because they just lost out in this Romo pursuit to the Cowboys, and Dallas seemed to do okay with a rookie quarterback last year. And, of course, Bill O'Brien's supposed to be, as you said, this QB guru. So it will be interesting for sure.
Yeah.
You mentioned Jay Cutler.
Pre-excuse making. I love it. A little pre-excuse making. Yeah. Well, you know, if we can't expect anything, if the rookie's out there, it's like, yeah, team just won 13 wins with a rookie. Let's talk a little bit about what you're doing as a head coach there, Bill.
Yeah, and it's hard for me to believe. I don't know if you're a Tom Savage guy. I mean, you know, we've seen so little, and he's been hurt both times he's had an opportunity. What do you think of him coming out of Pitt? Is he someone with that defense where they just kind of want him, yes, I'm going to use the dreaded term, to kind of get them through a game, manage the game? Can he do that if he could stay on the field and be healthy, do you think?
I guess so, because he's been in the system for a million years now, so you figure he's got to know something. And, you know, coming out, he was one of those draft darling-y guys, and, you know, I remember we were all talking, he's going to go in the top five by the time we got done going crazy about Savage. And I look at the Pitt tape, and I'm like, I don't see it. I see a nice, big, healthy kid who can throw. Kind of like Peterman this year. I see a nice, big, healthy kid who can throw and won't get you crushed. I don't see this super-duper prospect. Right. And if you factor in the injury element of that, then yeah, you know, what makes you think that the availability is ever going to be there? If the last couple of times we've tried to do it, it hasn't happened. And it's not like you're waiting on Brett Favre level talent to get healthy. You're waiting on, you know, Savage level talent to get healthy.
Right. And, you know, obviously behind Savage, they have Brandon Whedon, and we'll see. They probably will draft a quarterback. I was the fool who just submitted my mock draft 2.0 and actually had them pass on a quarterback yet again with one left on the board. So that shows you what I know. But you mentioned Jay Cutler as well. I don't want to make this just a Texans podcast. podcast. What do you think about Cutler? Is he now in waiting on injury mode? And between Jay Cutler and Colin Kaepernick, I'm sorry, I know it's been a few weeks, but I have to get your opinion on him as well. I mean, how many current starters are those two better than, and what will it take for them to get their opportunities? I know they're different situations, but why don't you run us through both if you don't mind?
They're both better than a lot of the starting quarterbacks right now. And you can say different situations, but at the core of it, there's a little bit of a same situation here where teams look at both of them and say, what are we bringing in? Are we bringing in somebody who will be who could quietly be a backup if asked for, or a custodian quarterback? Mm-hmm. Or are we looking for somebody who, A, has a high expectation, and B, could cause some kind of tremors in the locker room? Now, I am a believer that Colin Kaepernick isn't that guy. He isn't going to cause tremors in the locker room, cause problems, things like that. However, I can't speak for these 32 teams, and they're going to think differently, and that's part of it. Jay Cutler is similar in that. Everybody knows his reputation. Everybody knows how many difficulties he's had, how many questions are about his leadership. Those are there. And you factor in his case, you know, the age of him. He's a quarterback coming off injuries in his 30s and a downside. He's at the end of the road there and has come off like a really high contract where you have to wonder what his contract expectations are at this point. So, you know, if common sense prevails, teams will say, well, Kaepernick has the upside. He has the youth. You know, he's probably going to come cheaper. And you know, he hasn't gone around burning bridges except for the people at the bottom of the message board, not among people who you would think matter. That's how it would go. Common sense doesn't prevail in this day and age, doesn't always prevail in the NFL. Both of them could find themselves on the inside, outside waiting in. I could see Kaepernick winding up taking a pretty cheap contract to get on a roster after the draft, and Cutler being the guy who waits in injury mode, you know, in case of an emergency, break glass and bring this guy in. You know, because you're out of other options and he's a guy who can start for you.
Yeah, I think you're probably spot on there, Mike. And I'm also with you on Kaepernick not being this toxic locker room figure that he's portrayed by so many to be. That said, and I don't want to get too deep into this, although I know you have strong opinions and you wrote a great piece on Colin Kaepernick a couple weeks ago. Does this send a message, his unemployment at this juncture, to other players who are even thinking about kind of using the platform for their own voice? And I'm not saying Kaepernick was wrong. Maybe he's a little misguided, but do you think other players are certainly kind of paying keen attention to this and knowing how far they may or may not be able to step out?
Absolutely. I think you and so few players can say, well, I have job security right now, so I can do this kind of thing. That pretty much is a tiny percentage of the NFL. Everybody else is going to be in watch your P's and Q's mode. And, you know, I get to talk to the guys at the Rise Academy, you know, Malcolm Jenkins and goes like that. And, you know, that's a little bit of a different thing. That's a little bit more like old-fashioned politics and things like that. And you know, they say you have to build that critical mass of guys so that it's not one person stepping out. Because when one person steps out, they're the one who gets knocked over, and it needs to be 100 or 500. Right now, they've put a good position in place where one person, high profile, stepped out, getting knocked down, it's going to send a chilling message up and down. You can't tell me that's otherwise. I don't know if that's intentional or not, but that's certainly the message that's getting sent to players who want to speak their mind and want to be politically active on topics that high-level people in the NFL and their demographic don't particularly like.
Yeah, no doubt. We are chatting with Bleacher Report's lead writer, Mike Tenier. I would hope you've been following Mike on Twitter all along, but in the event you haven't, at Mike Tenier, T-A-N-I-E-R, one of the great follows. Like I said, always has me laughing at home. And Mike, I think this is a decent segue. I know it's a little different, but what about Richard Sherman? How big of a headache must he have become for an organization who historically will endure a lot of headaches in the locker room, off the field, for the on-field product? And is he gone come draft weekend? Do you think he burnt that bridge there in Seattle?
I don't know. I think that they're pretty good there about sort of making amends at the last minute if they have to. But you're right. I people are like, I'm shocked. Why are they trading Richard Sherman? Like, did you watch last season? Did you listen to him? Did you see fights on the sidelines? Did you see him arguing with coaches? Did you hear him questioning coaches? No one really wants that. No one wants a cornerback / offensive coordinator / defense coordinator / general manager. And that's kind of what he became there. And that's a legitimate issue. And you can be a you know, a players first, players coach. You know, we you know, don't run the tightest ship in that respect here. Guys can speak their minds, and then that can bubble over real quickly. And that obviously did with Richard Sherman. So I think they're testing the waters. I get the impression that what they would want in return is not going to be there, and that they're going to turn around and they're going to talk to Richard Sherman. And I think these guys in the end are mature individuals. Richard's a mature individual. The guys who run the teams are mature individuals, and they will kind of make peace with it. But there's a perfect logic of saying, look, if this is how you're going to be and this is how last year went and we're worried about that, let's look and see if we can all accommodate each other a little bit better, send you someplace else, and we can start over right. and not have you kind of chafing at the bit here.
You know, it was interesting whether he was, as you said, picking fights with Dalla Loggins or the local media. It did seem to be one thing after the other with Sherman, and still obviously a great player on the field. Mike, what do you think would be a reasonable return if they find something that they're pleased with? What do you think they're looking for is probably a better way to look for a better way to phrase the question. And how much leverage do you think that exists because of what a strong corner draft this is? In another year, do you think Seattle would be even entertaining this possibility?
I think that definitely plays into it. They can look in this draft and see guys that they like. I mean, there are guys up there in Washington that they watch every Saturday. They like, starting with Sidney Jones is hurt. But the other corner there is good, and they can get a safety from that team as well. I think it's a player in a pick situation, or it's like, or it's the first-round pick and, some other compensation. That's what they would be looking for, because there's not a lot of leverage there for them to have to make a move. Again, I think that they can come back and they can smooth over hard feelings at that point. And I think the player would have to be someone on the offensive line or somebody at the wide receiver core. And, of course, when you're talking about the Saints as a potential suitor, they usually have wide receivers lying around that could help another team. And, they do a pretty good job developing linemen as well. And they got two number one picks, so there's all kinds of things that they could do there. That hasn't happened. I think the Saints can be a kind of tricky team to make deals with, although the Seahawks have a history of making deals with them. I don't know who else is out there willing to make this big, massive commitment at this point, when a lot of teams can look at the draft and say, we can get a corner in the draft without changing our chemistry and without possibly bringing a guy in that we're not 100% sure is ready to go. Especially if you're one of those teams that's out of contention. You don't want to bring Richard Sherman in and say, oh, he's going to turn the team around and he's going to be like, I'm used to the playoffs every year. What's going on here? And starts becoming a personality that isn't 100% positive in the locker room and in the media.
Yeah, it's a great point. I don't think we talk enough about fit in the NFL and how even some great players can fail if the fit isn't correct. And you mentioned a team with an extra wide receiver laying around, and maybe it would have been the Saints. Obviously, Brandon Cooks now in New England. Doesn't it feel like, I know there's been conflicting reports on whether the Patriots would even entertain pursuing Richard Sherman, and I know that would depend a lot on Malcolm Butler, but doesn't it feel like that's kind of what we need to tie this whole Patriots offseason together, is them trading for arguably the best quarterback of the NFL after signing Stephon Gilmore? It really would be nice symmetry, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that rug really brought the whole room together. Yeah, you need the Sherman and Adrian Peterson to show up at the same time and basically just say, let's cancel the season because we put the dream team together. And it would be fun also, because when you do that, of course, you put a target on your head and the entire world is against you, and you do create possible chemistry problems. But we'll wait and see. I'm not sure that that's the direction they're heading in. Patriots are very good at like getting leverage and putting their name into situations when they think it's going to cause ripples around the league that they want. So maybe that's what's happening.
Is that the perfect way to sum up what was the driving force behind the Adrian Peterson visit? Was that late last week, early this week? My days are all mixed up, but I couldn't help but think, man, something is fishy about this, and I think you maybe just explained it for me.
Sometimes they do things like that. Sometimes it's a due diligence conversation to see what's available. You don't know when you bring him in. He might come in and say, all I want is a Super Bowl ring. I'll do goal line situation, and I'll work for the league minimum plus incentives. Like, okay, when you put it that way, that's probably not what he's saying, but why don't you bring him in? Why don't you have the meeting? And that's one of the things. When the Patriots have a meeting, we all jump around and we all say, what does it mean? What does it mean? A lot of teams have meetings all the time. You worry about the teams that never seem to like kick tires and never seem to make these decisions, because then you ask, what are they really doing? How are they pursuing getting better any way possible? Patriots are always doing that. Some teams aren't.
Mike, could you see a scenario where Marshawn Lynch unretires and Adrian Peterson retires this offseason?
I can see any scenario right now. I can see Marshawn Lynch in the booth next to Tony Romo with a 7-second delay beep button every time an F-bomb gets dropped. I can see anything right now. You know, the Lynch thing is perplexing. I didn't get the impression he was keeping himself in 100% game condition. You know, when I would see him now and then, even when I saw him on Brooklyn 99, he did not look like he was ready to go out there and carry the ball 25 times a game. So, we'll wait and see on that. I could see Adrian Peterson retiring at this point. That's the one I could definitely see right now, because he doesn't seem like someone who is in love with the idea of becoming a committee back. I think just like Richard Sherman, although he didn't pick fights with everybody, you know, Adrian Peterson's used to everything being Adrian Peterson's team. And there are teams that might look at him and say, look, if we line up in the shotgun and we only give you 12 carries a game, is the local media going to know about this, and is this going to be an issue? When you factor that all together, he might look around and say, hey, there's going to be somebody who put me in the booth, and I can hang it up right now, have this Hall of Fame career, and not get hit anymore. Possibility that might come up, especially if we don't see him before the draft, because all these running backs are coming out in the draft, and there will be zero franchise running back opportunities by the time the end of April hits.
Yeah, and obviously a Hall of Fame career for Adrian Peterson, just one of the more dominant players for a long, sustained period, but it is easy to overlook. Yeah. If anyone's curious why he's still unemployed, Mike just hit on it. He doesn't run out of the shotgun. He doesn't do anything on passing downs. He's looking for likely a big sum of money, so it's really not as perplexing as some maybe would make it out to be. Mike, let's spend just a few minutes quickly talking about the draft, and I'll just tee it up for you very generally. What are you most intrigued to see? What may be the biggest surprise? What's the big theme that you're following with the draft now 3 weeks away?
I have no idea what's going on, and that's it. I've been following the draft daily, writing scouting reports, writing things like that, and I don't really know who the number one quarterback is going to get drafted right now, because I don't have a good sense of who those teams at the top, that need quarterbacks, teams like the Jets near the top, et cetera, like among Mitchell, Trubisky, Mahomes, Watson, and I think Kaiser a rung below them. I can't make sense of these top defensive players, how they're going to go. They're all excellent. And take a team like the Bears who are out there in Chicago. I look at the Bears' needs, and I look up and down their front seven, and they're picking third, and I can't even make a good sense. Are they going to go get Adams at safety? Are they going to go get Lattimore at cornerback? Are they going to get one of the defensive linemen? Thomas might be there, but he might go number two. Allen from Alabama.
Right.
I've got no sense of that right now. When you're at number three and you can't make a good decision as to what's going to happen, forget about trying to do a mock draft to get down to 15. All I know is, you're going to be in there's going to be a second round of this draft that's going to look like the first round of, say, like the 2013 draft, the one that stunk, because there's going to be so much talent hanging around, so many interesting, intriguing players. It's going to be the best draft Friday ever. And teams that are at the top, teams like the Bears, the 49ers at the top, they basically have two first-round picks. If you're picking 33, 34, up to about 40, you have two first-round picks, and you got to make the most of it.
And there are going to be some fascinating phone calls late Thursday evening, early Friday morning, I'm sure, about those guys that kind of bled over into day two that still do have first-round talent. There's no doubt about it. Mike, what do you think about the offensive line? I know you said you've been bunkered down on defensive line. I'm not looking for specific names, but I'm just worried, and I'm wondering if quarterbacks should be worried, because we already know about the state of offensive line play around the NFL. There's a bunch of teams that need upgrades. The Broncos come to mind, and they really seem like they're going to be few and far between in this draft. It's going to leave a lot of teams in a lurch, I'd have to think.
Yeah, you got Bowles, the kid from Utah, who isn't that much of a kid. He's in his mid-20s already.
25,
and
yep.
He's super, real powerful, powerful dude. And you don't get any sense that he's got his footwork down or anything like that. If you put him in some zone-blocking scheme, he's going to be all over the place. I'm not a big fan of the kid. I was in Ramchick from Wisconsin. I'm not a huge fan of him. I think he's okay. And you get down into that next tier, and you got a lot of these guys who, they're not going to get you destroyed, but they're not first-round picks. If you're going to go out there and say, I got a first-round pick, and he's going to be an offensive tackle, you're going to be reaching for a project, or you're going to be getting a guy who is like, well, he won't get my quarterback killed. You don't get those guys in the first round. That's not a good plan. And I think you saw it in free agency, because you saw teams like the Panthers go out and get Khalil, and you saw the Vikings, and everybody was grabbing everybody else's veteran offensive lineman and bring him onto the roster. Russell Okung goes and he gets on the Chargers, and because the Chargers lost guys, the Giants got him. Everybody was trying to get the next veteran out there, even if they're just shuffling the veterans around, not 100% comfortable with what they're seeing out there. So you don't want to be that team that says, oh, this is our number one, our only priority, because you're not going to find it, and you're likely to reach if you go into the first round. Late in the round, maybe it's different. Maybe if you're down there and you're the Broncos, you can say, we're going to get Bowles or Ramchick, or there's another couple other guys, Forrest Lamp, somebody like that.
Yep.
But if you're 15, 12, 13, get a defensive player and come up with a plan B and hope your quarterback survives.
It was funny, too, Mike, how seemingly as free agency kind of progressed, the contracts got more outrageous. How did Russell Okung end up landing the least durable guy of all of them? I think he got the most guaranteed money, and you look back and suddenly the Ricky Wagner deal looks like a bargain. So it will be interesting. Just another minute or two here with Mike Tenier, Bleacher Report. Mike, I know you are close to Philly and following the Eagles closely. I'm going to do a little NFC East discussion after we wrap up. What do you think of what the Eagles have done? Howie Roseman, never lacking aggression, but he did lack a big bankroll this offseason. It still seemed like he maybe really improved his team on the cheap. Is that an accurate kind of perception?
Yeah, and it comes. You start with Alshon Jeffrey, who I think is obviously a big upgrade, and you add Torrey Smith to the mix, and then they made a little move just now. I mean, you lose Benny Logan, and that's a significant ball player. You come and get Timmy Jernigan, you save about $8 million in cap space. You do it in swapping third round picks, moving down in the third round. So they did a lot to address a lot of needs there. You know, the typical Eagles offseason often is taking their core players and extending them. I don't think we saw a lot of that this year. I can't remember like anybody getting extended. I think they did most of that the previous year.
There was no money left.
Shopping thing.
There's no money left after last offseason. Right, right.
That's true. So it's interesting. And of course, you know, it's a cliche, but it comes down to Carson Wentz's development. But what did you do for the development there? You brought in a franchise wide receiver, a potential deep threat. So you maximize the opportunity he's going to have to take a big step in year two.
Yeah, no doubt. I like the Chance Warmack, kind of a low-risk one-year deal as well.
Yeah.
And I think the stage probably set. I think I just mocked him. And again, it's not like I know a damn thing, but I think Christian McCaffrey is the direction I went, and it does look like the back is the remaining missing piece, unless you're a Wendell Smallwood guy. Would you see anything from him last year? Probably looking for an upgrade.
I saw a little bit from him in camp. He was kind of okay. I think you can upgrade there. I think there's still questions in the secondary, in the corner positions, particularly safety is right. That you could address in the first round. But McCaffrey would be intriguing here. Philadelphia would go gaga for that one.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, tremendous stuff from Mike Tenier. He is a busy man. He has got to get back into the bunker and watch defensive tackle play. Mike, thank you so much. It's always such a joy to have you on the podcast, and I hope we can do it again real soon.
Always a pleasure. Thanks. Take care and enjoy. Hopefully I see you at the draft this year.
Yeah, but still got to make those plans. I hope so, too. But if not, we will we'll circle back very soon. That is Mike Tenier, lead writer at Bleacher Report. Make sure you are checking out his stuff, not only at Bleacher Report, but, of course, on Twitter, at Mike Tenier.
And one more big thank you to Mike. Great stuff, as always, from him. And another big thank you to Loot Crate, our wonderful sponsor, who I reintroduced you to at the top of the show. Of course, the biggest thank you of all goes to you, the listener, who continues to come back and check out the Pro Football Weekly podcast. We couldn't be more appreciative of that. And one more reminder, if you haven't done so already, we'd love it if you head over to iTunes, subscribe to the PFW podcast while you're over there. Leave us a rating, a like, a comment, all those forms of interaction definitely help us continue to gain traction. By us, I mean your host, Arthur Arkish, the rest of our crew at Pro Football Weekly. Make sure you're keeping it locked in to ProFootballWeekly.com and checking out all of our terrific draft coverage, both of our magazines, the 2017 Draft Magazine and the Update, available at the website. You can get the Update exclusively on the website. You can find the first version at newsstands, of course. And as I mentioned, I think I've got my mock draft 2.0 up there today. Lots of other good stuff in store. So I will let you go, but we'll be back next week. Going to bring Greg Gabriel back on the program and start diving into the draft a little bit more. We've got 3 weeks left, and we're going to try and go wall-to-wall here with the draft coverage soon. So keep it locked into ProFootballWeekly.com. Thank you so much again, and we'll talk to you next week on the Pro Football Weekly podcast.